puts together Owatonna, Faribault, Waseca, Medford, Morristown, Blooming Prairie, and Ellendale. About 75,000 total residents in that district, and they decided they wanted me up here, and that's why I'm here. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Perry. Also would like to welcome back as our page, Allison Jones, who's sitting behind us here. Those of you who met her last year know of her fine work. And also we're joined by one of my interns, Robert Strickland from McAllister. We also will have one from university, I believe it is. Our first bill today is Senate File 2251, Senator Bonhoff, and it is a proposal to change the primary, the state primary, to August. We have before us a delete all amendment. It is the revisers number SCS 2251A-1. Senator Marty moves the delete everything amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We have another author's amendment, the A3 amendment. Senator Marty moves the A3 amendment, which is an amendment to the delete all. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is that the only, it's just the two amendments. Is that
yes,
correct,
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Bonhoff? Okay, now the bill is in the shape that the author would like for the purposes of discussion. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to begin by talking about the process whereby we are discussing Senate File 2251 today. As you may recall, that last session we in the Senate passed an early primary bill as part of an overall omnibus bill. This was passed in both the House and the Senate, and the conference committee report was passed, and then the governor did veto the overall elections bill. After that, we were contacted by Professor Larry Jacobs, the Walter F. Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the Humphrey Institute, and he suggested that we work together in a bipartisan, bicameral way during the interim to look at what we might be willing to agree on and reach broad consensus so that that wouldn't happen again. I would like to thank Professor Jacobs for his work, as well as his assistant, Rachel Smith. The people who did come together over the interim to work on this, besides myself, was, of course, our Senator Rest, the chair of our committee, Senator Katie Sieben, the chair of the election subcommittee, Senator Chris Gerlach. And additionally, from the House, we had Representative Tom Emmer, Representative Winkler, and Representative Simon. We had representatives from the governor's office. We had local election officials. We had representation from the Secretary of State's office. And we had nonpartisan and legislative staff. In that process, we decided to take the early primary bill and do that separately. There became great urgency around the early primary bill for a couple reasons. One is that any change to the primary, we would need to give the local election people plenty of time to adjust to those changes, as well as the public and our current elected officials. But most importantly, what added urgency to this process was that on October 28th, President Obama signed into law the Federal MOVE Act, the Military and Overseas Voters Empowerment Act. This required 45-day absentee balloting period for federal elections. This was done to accommodate the military and overseas voters. The current schedule, as we had in law, only allowed 30 days. Some states all currently accept ballots after Election Day, and Minnesota does not do that. So in order for us to comply with federal law, we thought it best to go ahead and make this change. Therefore, you have the bill before you. This bill makes three major changes to Minnesota election law. It moves the date of the state primary from the first Tuesday after the second Monday in September to the second Tuesday in August in each even-numbered year. It changes the beginning of the time period for voting in person by absentee ballot from 30 days before the date of the election to 46 days before the election, and it changes the timing provided for special elections for federal office to enable a 45-day absentee balloting period. These changes will allow Minnesota to conform to the recently enacted federal legislation known as the MOVE Act. In addition, I have put in this chart before you how this act will affect everybody here, as well as things that the public will want to pay attention to as this is put into law. Before I call your attention to some of those changes, I wanted to briefly address what the amendments are. So there is currently, the cities are allowed to amend their city charters, and in order to do that, they must have their petitions turned in approximately 5 weeks before the primary. The A3 amendment simply moves the deadline for submitting these petitions to 5 weeks before the earlier primary. As it was, that was going to happen when they would turn it in on the actual date of our current primary. The language as introduced requires a special primary 11 weeks before the special election. But if the special election is held concurrently with the general election in an odd year, that would make the special primary date 1 week after the regular primary. So in order to make it more simple, this amendment simply says that in such case, that primary would be held on the same date as the primary for the general election. So any questions before we move to discussion on the timeline?
Senator Bonhoff and members, there's a technical correction to the A3 amendment pointed out to me by Mr. Bodern. It should read page 13, line 15, after election insert. So we'll ask Mr. Bodern to incorporate that technical reference in reporting the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members have the reproduced the schedule of events in two ways. One of them is those items in the bill that we thought would be the most interesting for the members of the public, that is, our voters. And then there is a more detailed timeline, schedule of events that perhaps gets more interesting to our members who actually run for office. The bill itself has all of these in it, and I'm sure that Senator Bonhoff and our counsel stand ready to answer any questions. And I understand there is one. We did have one person sign up, Mr. Ferber, to testify on the bill. If you have no questions at this time for Senator Bonhoff. Any questions for Senator Bonhoff or for counsel? Seeing none, Mr. Ferber.
Thank you, Mr. Ferber.
Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
My name is Tom Ferber. I'm the city clerk at the city of Bloomington and also the co-chair of the League of Minnesota Cities and Minnesota Clerks and Finance Officers Association Elections Task Force. I'm here this morning to support the early primary bill as it is presented to you. I think it provides the opportunity for our voters overseas in particular to have that ability to vote by absentee. And I think that as we move forward here, timing is of essence. Having the primary move to August will be tight, but we have a lot of things have to be done in preparation for an election, including securing our polling places. This is a change in date, so obviously as we are coming up on this date, we will need to get our polling places lined up. notify our election judges that indeed we're changing the primary, notify our voters, and get information out in our newsletters and information in the press. We will need to get our training schedules taken care of and make sure that everything gets done earlier this year. So the June primary is coming up fast, or I mean June primary. Some people had talked about a June primary, and that really isn't feasible this year because of the timeline that we're looking at. As you can see, the filing period is coming up. It would be coming up in May. If we had a June primary, it'd probably be next month. So really, in order to get all of the candidates the ability to think about filing for local offices and other offices, and for the cities and counties to be prepared for those filings, we'd need the August primary will work fine.
Mr. Ferber, we had a some of us had a press briefing prior to this hearing, and one of the questions that was raised was, doesn't an August primary, when the turnout is low, favor incumbents? And because a lot of sitting legislators didn't like a June primary date to start with, because until the middle of May, they'd be sitting here in St. Paul. But I think your point is well taken, that if we had moved it to June, election officials would be hard-pressed to have everything in place, and that August is, whether it benefits or hurts incumbents or challengers, that August is a feasible time for local government officials, and they would have been hard-pressed to have accomplished a primary that was set for the second Tuesday in June, for example. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, that is a fair assessment.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Ferber? Any questions about the timelines?
Madam Chair, just to,
Senator Bonoff,
take members through. So we obviously, precinct caucuses have passed. The next important time is the filing period for elected officials, which begins May 18th and is complete June 1st. The absentee ballot applications are sent to the permanent absentee voters on June 11th. The absentee balloting period for the primary, and this is just for 2010, all these dates, June 25th to August 9th, the state primary then being August 10th. That then opens up absentee balloting period for the general election, September 17th to November 1st, with the general election being on November 2nd. Some of the less important to the public, but important for those elected officials here, might be campaign signs now are allowed on June 25th. Certainly much earlier. Public subsidy agreements are due to the Campaign Finance Board on July 20th. The cutoff for collecting $50 contributions to qualify for those funds is now July 19th.
Any questions? Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Senator Bonoff on the sign issue. I understand that's one of those tangential issues. It's not mandated by the MOVE Act, but it makes sense to make things correspond with everything we're doing here. It's interesting because now I imagine we're not going to hear about anything about this from the cities until signs all of a sudden pop up early and everybody's wondering why they're up before the 4th of July. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out this year. But can I have a clarification? This is the sign date for everyone, regardless of if there's a primary or not. There's not special rules for that. This is just every candidate that's going to be out or that's filed can put their signs up starting in late June then. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, I had that exact question. And so, yes, you are correct. Although what I would say is that I presume people who do not have primaries will still not choose to put their signs out that long because they won't be very impactful when we're talking about a November 2nd. I think our names would become like wallpaper and wouldn't be very noticed. So I think we'll see the big change with regard to the primary. I don't know that you'll see the same behavior change when it comes to the general election signs.
Putting the date in the statute, however, is that the state law preempts whatever is in municipalities' ordinances, and if a local government jurisdiction is silent on campaign signs, and they're actually called non-commercial signs, if they're silent, then the June 25th date governs, and if they had a later date, and that was true for the August 1st date in current law as well, if they had a later date, the state date is a preemption, and it is for everybody, whether you have a primary or not. Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, you said if a municipality is silent on the matter, I would think there are no restrictions. You could put your lawn signs out anytime you wanted. Wouldn't that be the case?
The state law would prevail. No, would rule.
State law. I think that...
Mr. Bodden, is that the case or not?
My understanding, and I need to look up the section, but the state law sets what is in effect the minimum allowance, and if municipalities wish to expand that, they can. And
yes, they could. Well, okay, they could certainly say earlier, but candidate.
No, it's not. Madam Chair, if they're silent, you know, free speech just prevails, and you can put any name out on your lawn that you wish. But that speaks to, I would think that speaks to Senator Bonhoff's point that in practice we won't see much of it because it's not going to be very effective and it's going to be a little ridiculous.
Yes, your understanding is better than mine.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, just one more thing. Within
Bonhoff.
Your packet, members, there is a very detailed explanation with regard to how this will affect special elections for the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. I call your attention to that because if you read that section in the bill, it is extremely complicated, and I suspect you will not understand exactly how it impacts those provisions, and so that is why there is this detailed explanation, and you almost have to read it and picture a calendar and go through it line by line to understand what it does.
Are there any questions on the explanation? Any other questions for Senator Bonhoff or comments? Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, does anybody, having looked at other states where they are, what kind of turnout what kind of fall off will there be for a summer primary? I'm just curious.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, I don't know the answer to that question. Senator Marty, you know that last session I advocated strongly for a June primary because of that very concern. I believe that you are one of the strongest opponents of that June primary, and so I think that is one of the concerns around an August primary. I wish we were talking about a June primary. Nonetheless, we're going to start with this because this is what we had consensus on. We worked hard over the interim with, as I said, Democrats, Republicans, House and Senate, and the governor's office, and I think we do have agreement on this bill. We will find out, you know, whether or not we will have a significant drop-off. I think we're going to call on our cities, really, and ask them to help us reach out to the voters and say, you know, you're not used to this. I know you might not normally be thinking about political elections at this time, but we're going to have to really be partners to let the public know. And if it doesn't work, Senator Marty, then perhaps we'll be back here in a couple of years saying maybe June is the better month.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, my comment is about summer in general. I think June is not going to be particularly better than August, but I do support this. You and I do agree on that. This is August is for the concerns that the local elected officials as well as Congress now in terms of the overseas voting, it's keep hoping it's going to get better over the years, but it hasn't been so.
Well, I think too, Senator Marty, that one of the there were different ways that the group that was meeting discussing these issues considered that were allowable, appropriate responses to the MOVE Act, and one that was almost without discussion rejected was allowing ballots to be counted that came in after Election Day. But that would have been an acceptable response as far as the federal government was concerned. But to a person, I think we said that is not the way Minnesota does it now, and we would much prefer response that was an earlier primary, and you couldn't, it's about the latest earliest primary we could do, rather than having ballots count late and or approaching the federal government asking for a waiver and keeping our current primary date.
And Madam Chair, I agree. I think you made wise choices in that.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a specific question on some new language that was added in the delete all. On page 18, lines 18, 30 and 32, it has to do with the rotation of candidates' names. And I just wanted to make sure I understand that, about that language there. And we have rules about, I know we have rules about the rotation of candidates' names. Apparently it's more complicated than that with using some sort of a basis and calculation of number of votes and what. What is the necessity of the additional language, and what's the purpose of that?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, that has to do with the way that they decide when your name is rotated is an algorithm based on how many registered voters that there are, so that an equal number of registered voters would see your name in a certain place on each ballot. And so because we are moving everything, they would have used the number of registered voters based on a later date. Now we need to move that up in a corresponding fashion to use the number of registered voters in time to be able to make the ballots and thus have the candidates' names rotated.
Okay. All right, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, because there's new language there. I mean, how come we didn't just move the – it should have been in place already, and shouldn't we just have a new date stricken and a new date moved or something? Because we've got the whole –
Madam Chair, and I'll defer to counsel on why it was drafted that way.
Is this just an alternative to that, or is this new language needed?
I think the rules fix a date certain at the present time. This is a faster way to change what's written in rule to make sure the date works.
So we're codifying the rule
and changing it.
And changing it at the same time, which would be the reason for the additional language in the bills. Am I understanding that correctly?
Madam Chair and Senator Gerlach, we're putting in statute how the rules are going to have to operate.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Senator Gerlach, like to move the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the bill.
Senator Gerlach moves that Senate File 2251, as amended, be recommended to pass. Discussion? Anyone else in the public wish to make a statement on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
Bonoff. We'll now move to Senate File 351, Senator Marty. This bill had been on the Senate floor at the end of session. As he is coming forward, I wanted to pass out to members a communication from the Gambling Control Board. As you know, they produce an annual organizational report on lawful gambling. They are required to send it to the legislative committee chairs, but I also wanted to make sure, and I just got it, wanted to make sure that members had it. There are some report highlights there. This is the document, which is of every single organization that is under the Gambling Control Board. And if you want this, if you want the full report, I would encourage you to go to their website, www.gcb.state.mn.us, and click on Annual Reports. Senator Marty, we have Senate File 351 before us.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is a bill that you have seen before. You saw it last year. Matter of fact, it passed out of here, made it to the floor. It was called back to Rules Committee, and then Rules Committee decided it wasn't their jurisdiction. They passed it back to the floor. So it was still directly in effect from our committee, the floor, and because it did not get considered on the floor, it bumped back to here.
Yes.
So the bill has been here through here before once, and I do have an A2 amendment, which will not be as an author. It's something I want to put on the bill, but I'll explain it and make the case for it when we when we're ready for that, because it's the bill has already been through the committee.
But Senator Marty, do you want that amendment passed out now, though?
Yes, you can pass it out now, yes. This bill is a very simple bill. It would prohibit legislators, constitutional officers, and agency heads from lobbying either at the legislative or the administrative, state administrative level for 2 years after leaving office. And this is something this committee has passed several times over the years. I think now there are 30-some states that do this. We have Mr. Frank from Common Cause will testify on that in a minute. The whole issue, and I don't want to make this the biggest issue out there, but I think it is a question of we serving here develop friendships. We have, I don't know if you want to call it insider information, but we build contacts and political and informational contacts through the work we do here, as do agency commissioners and so on. And turning around immediately, we're here representing the public. We're here to serve the public. And it's appropriate that groups outside the legislative process in our democracy come in and they petition us, or they hire somebody else to petition us direct as lobbyists. It's appropriate for that to happen. I've always been bothered by the concept that we are, one day we're working for the public and the next day we are turning around and lobbying our former colleagues and so on. And I've seen this happen. It happens many times at the legislature. It also has happened in state agencies where a person becomes a commissioner who regulates certain industries, and they leave that industry, they leave that department head, and they go to work for the industry, and they're now lobbying their former subordinates for agency help and so on. This is simply a two-year, some call it cooling off period, but to stop the immediate revolving door between public office and lobbying. And the amendment, which I will explain because I think it's, we actually discussed part of this, or both parts of this amendment last year during the hearing. The first part, the first two lines, line 1.2 and 3, would limit the definition of a lobbyist to, in effect, a paid lobbyist. Some of the committee members expressed concern that one of the ways you have to register as a lobbyist is if you spend over $250 to lobby on whether it's postage and printing and things other than travel expenses. You are required under Minnesota law to register as a lobbyist. If somebody leaves state agency or legislative or constitutional officer position and they feel so passionate about some issue they want to lobby on it, just as a volunteer, in effect, we're not trying to prohibit that. And this was actually discussed, and Senate Council had come up with language on it, but apparently we decided not to add it at the time, and I think that it was a good discussion in the committee. I think it would be appropriate to add. The other one came from a concern from Gary Goldsmith at the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board on how we define head of state agency or department. And to be more clear, we have several more lines to explain exactly who would be covered by that. I think the second part is purely technical. The first part of it is I think, what most people are, what I and I think most of us are concerned about, and that is the changing for compensation who we're working for, from working for the public interest to somebody else. And if somebody leaves here and they want to volunteer their time on behalf of some cause, there certainly, this would not limit it. So that's what the point of the amendment is, and I'd like to move that.
Senator Marty moves the A2 amendment. Is there discussion? I don't think at this point we can regard it as an author's
amendment.
You're
right, it's not
okay?
An author's.
Discussion on the A2 amendment. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, I do.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, what did I say? What did I say?
You said Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Madam Chair, Senator Marty, I do support your bill. Obviously, I'm a co-author. I'm not asking this question in an attempt to put you on the spot here, but help me explain the difference between being the head of a state agency immediately after being in the legislature or being a governor.
These are the positions that are covered. Those are the people who cannot lobby. In other words, if a governor cannot turn around and lobby the legislature or a state agency after leaving, we could not leave here and turn around and lobby.
This is not about legislators becoming
governor. I was thinking
governor.
That this was about this
no,
was a prohibition
no, you could still
on
become an agency head or whatever.
I got it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
Senator Marty, clear up how this affects a person's right to work in this state.
Okay.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, this would, for 201 legislators and five constitutional officers, and I'm guessing maybe 200 people who fall into these other categories, would limit them from working at about, I think there are about 1,500 registered lobbyists in the state, so it seems to me there are about 2 million jobs, so it does limit, we couldn't take 1,500 of those 2 million jobs. Other than that, we could do whatever we want, and we could still work for, in other words, I could go to work for a company that hires a lobbyist. I just could not do lobbying for a two-year period. But otherwise, so it does put a limitation on what you can do after leaving here if this is enacted. It would be a two-year limit on you taking one of those, I think it's about 1,500 lobbyists right now.
What is the federal government rule with regard to members of Congress and or members of the executive branch?
Madam Chair, I believe it's 1 year, but maybe we should have Mr. Frank's testimony right now if that would be approved.
Okay.
Madam Chair, to answer that directly, as far as President Obama.
Excuse me for just a moment. If you would identify yourself,
yes,
please,
sorry,
for the
Chair.
Record.
Madam Chair, my name is Jerry Frank. I'm a board member of Common Cause Minnesota.
Mr. Frank.
As far as I can try to answer the question as far as the administration is concerned, President Obama, on his first full day in office, signed an executive order that said that anybody who leaves his administration to lobby his administration is banned for the length of his administration. So it'd be a four-year or eight-year ban on if anybody leaving his administration to lobby his administration.
What about
members?
Members
of Congress right now, I believe it's 1 year, yes.
1 year. And there have been similar bans in previous administrations. Have there not been on, it wasn't just Democrats. I mean, I don't know whether President Bush's had a ban of that length, but I think there have done that. They have done that in the past, have they, or have they not?
Is
this the first time for the executive branch?
Have,
okay. It's just been Congress where the – and do you know when that was passed?
In the last 3 years.
Beg pardon?
It was passed sometime within the last 3 years.
During the Bush administration, then?
I think so. I think
– it would have to be.
Senator Klobuchar worked on it, I believe, but I can't recall it. I'm thinking 2-3 years ago it was.
Are there additional questions or comments about the A2 amendment? Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It might be to the amendment. Senator Marty, you mentioned about the volunteer versus paid issue, and you said that the amendment covered that. We had a lengthy discussion over the volunteer versus paid issue last year, and I'm trying to remember that. And can you tell me specifically how you are addressing that issue and how your amendment does that?
Sure. Madam Chair,
Senator Marty.
Senator Gerlach, yes, we, Senate Council, we're having a discussion because our memories were not great. We remembered the discussion. We thought we had put it on there, but it was not put on there. The language we put in here, the way it does that is clause, it says, is defined in sub 21, paragraph A, clause 1, and clause 2 of subdivision 21A, paragraph A is, defines a lobbyist as one who may, even if they're not compensated, who spends more than $250, not including their own traveling expenses and membership dues in any year for purpose of attempting to influence, et cetera, has to register. And we're saying it's only, you only have to, you're only prohibited from, you would still have to register as a lobbyist as everybody else would if you chose to do the volunteer stuff and spent $1,000 of your own money. But you would not be banned from doing that here. So we're doing what I thought the committee's desire was last year, and I think is a reasonable choice, and that is to say, look, if you leave here and you want to go do volunteer work advocating for some cause that you feel passionately about here or wherever, you're welcome to do so. And I don't think there was any intent to ban that.
Senator Gerlach.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, as you know, we had a spirited discussion on this last year, and I'm opposed to this for a number of principled reasons, and I know what you're trying to get at. I think it's a solution in search of a problem. I think what you're trying to get at is an undue access or influence that legislators may have on their former colleagues and such, and you want to close that door. But on the volunteer versus paid, I still so now you're proposing that it's okay to have that access and influence advantage if it's volunteer, but just not if you're paid. So it's, am I getting that right? You've drawn that distinction there, that it's okay in one case, but not in another. Is that correct?
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
Senator Gerlach, what I'm trying to say, when you and I are elected to represent the public interest, represent our constituents and their well-being, if you feel the best way to represent them is to advocate for whatever, higher or lower taxes or whatever you choose to advocate for, and you're doing that here, you think that's in the public interest, and you still believe that when you leave office, you're allowed to do that. We're just saying you can't be a hired gun who's coming back here for compensation to lobby your colleagues and so on. Because the whole point of it, what we're trying to deal with, is the conflict between the groups where they can hire you and get somebody who has some additional access to the process.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I think that we,
Senator Gerlach,
I think that the issue of volunteer versus paid still isn't solved then, because there's a fundamental flaw, Senator Marty, in this. For example, let's just say, pick your issue, like you say, okay, let's say that someone is a very, very strong advocate for early childhood education. They work on that issue while they're here in the legislature. They make contacts. They have a lot of knowledge. Now they've left that. Now, let's say they're not hired, but they are put in a capacity with an organization, Ready for K, or some other early childhood advocacy group, but they're a volunteer. Well, they still have that access and that influence. They're influencing legislation. They're not being paid for it, but they've skirted your law just because they're not being paid. So really, I think what you're saying is the bad thing here is not the advocacy of an issue, not the access or influence one might exert, but rather whether you're being paid for it or not. Is that?
Madam Chair, Senator
Marty,
Gerlach, what I have the problem with is that somebody can hire me or you in order to lobby the political process. See, I have a philosophical, my own personal belief is that somebody who's a paid, hired gun to come here and persuade us of something shouldn't be making contributions to our campaigns either. I just don't think that that's appropriate. I don't think we should. I would draw the line there, and some disagree with that. That's okay. I'm just saying that I think that there is a conflict in doing it, and I'm just saying that if you don't like that part of the amendment, I don't mind if we keep it out. I just think that I don't know a lot of people coming back here the day after they leave the legislature and saying and spending hundreds of dollars of their own money to advocate for some cause. Maybe they do, and maybe they don't. If you have a problem with that, I'd be glad to divide out that part of the amendment so you can, if you feel prefer that.
Well, no, Madam Chair, I don't want to.
Okay, I don't care. In other words, I was just trying to do what I thought the committee was saying. They had concern that people ought to be able to do that, and I'm not trying to stop that.
Senator Marty, Senator Gerlach, I think you make it's a good question to raise that point and to explore that. It seems to me, however, that in fact the people who have left the legislature and occasionally come back to lobby as, let's say, a member of the League of Women Voters or something, that is a generally a casual contact as opposed to being paid to be here every minute that we are in session lobbying on an issue. So I think it's you make a valid point in making the distinction, but I think in practice, the person that comes back as a volunteer with notable exceptions, and we know that there are a couple of people who do, they're not legislators, but who are volunteer lobbyists who are here all the time, but they truly are exceptions, that the amount of time makes the distinction that Senator Marty is proposing in the amendment between, quote, volunteer and paid lobbyists an acceptable one to move to. That, and it's a valid point, but I don't think it overcomes the notion that someone should be, it should be okay for someone to come and occasionally within 2 years after they leave the legislature and lobby on, you know, a League of Women Voters issue, for example. And I'm not asking you to accept that argument, mm-hmm. but I see that there's something that there's something vastly different between a volunteer and a that's mostly casual, and someone who's paid to be here every day we're in session. Further discussion on the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
I am so concerned that our government is walking a very gray area here in telling its citizens what they can do. Because somebody has a lot of knowledge and has been in whatever industry, I mean, where will this go from here? That's my fear. If we're going to say that if you leave a position and you can't have this right to use your knowledge and go to work, you know, is this the only place it's going to stop, or are we going to start looking in other fields? I mean, I just think we're riding this fine line. And don't get me wrong, I think there needs to be some kind of lobbying reform. I'm just concerned about this restricting of a person's right to have a job.
Any other discussion?
This is still an amendment, Madam Chair?
Yes, we have the A2 amendment. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now we have Senate File 351 as amended before us.
Madam Chair?
Madam Chair, Mr. Frank had some testimony for Common Cause as well. If we could have, maybe we could take his testimony.
Yes. I'm going to move to that. I was going to a vote. Just wanted to make sure that we had the amendment and the bill before us now as amended. Mr. Frank, did you have further comments? Or Senator Betzel, did you want to question or comment?
Well, just a comment, which may tie into some further discussion. I think we need to put an effective date in here because I'm thinking about Senator Day, who used to sit next to me, and under the strict reading of this, this sort of pass, here's an individual who left the legislature, and the rules were he could become a lobbyist, and all of a sudden it would be illegal for him to do that. So I think we need to identify that this only applies to people on or after a certain date. I've asked Senate Counsel to kind of think about that and propose an amendment here. So,
Senator Marty, perhaps something like
Mr. Broder's got some language.
Yeah, that like the end of the
people
year
leaving, people
or
leaving office after
Madam Chair,
December 31st.
Because we don't want to retroactively go back and hit people who are right.
Indeed not. Mr. Bodern, did you have a suggestion?
Madam Chair, I can just read this orally. You could supply a new Section 2 with an effective date that would say this section is effective July 1st, 2010, or pick whatever other date you want, and applies to individuals leaving the offices or positions listed in Section 1 after that date.
July 1, does that make sense to people, or should it be something else? Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, what about a simple after enactment date? Once it's become law from that point forward.
Yeah, that's fine.
Which would not affect anybody right now.
Madam Chair, it would have to be affecting people who leave office on or after the date fell in.
On or after the enactment date.
And,
Senator Betzel, better idea?
The trouble is with enactment dates, those you know immediate effective dates work good for state agencies because they track, but it only becomes law when the bill actually passes the legislature and the governor then signs it. So unless you're I don't think it's going to really affect people, but the other thing is that are we going to have a mass exodus of people resigning their offices, you know, on May 31st or June 30th. I don't know. I mean, I like dates certain with something like this. Just say, in fact, and I'm not wedded to anything. I just think we need to clarify that issue.
Okay. Why don't we be mulling that over while we hear the testimony and perhaps Mr. Bodern can take Senator Betzel's advice and see what he can come up with as we work further on this bill. Mr. Frank.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Jerry Frank, and I am a board member of Common Cause Minnesota, a nonpartisan government watchdog. Common Cause often describes itself as a citizen's lobby organization. Lobbying and lobbyists play an important role in our legislative process. But over the years, scandal after scandal has soured the public's view of lobbyists, and in some cases, fairly so. A 2008 Gallup poll rating professions on honesty and ethics put lobbyists at the very bottom, even below car salespeople and telemarketers.
Below legislators?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair. We believe that the revolving door between the legislature and lobbying firms contributes to this negative image of lobbyists and, by association, government. To have the trust of the public, government must operate in a manner that is not only ethical, but also that which appears ethical. When a legislator is elected or a person is appointed to an executive branch position, they are given a certain degree of trust and influence. This influence grows with time and experience and is to be used to achieve a public good while conducting the business of our state. If that person leaves government and immediately begins to lobby on behalf of some third party, the intent is to use that influence to achieve a purpose that may or may not be the ideal result for the state. Common Cause Minnesota supports a cooling-off period of 2 years where a former legislator could not become a registered lobbyist. An analogy to this requiring this cooling-off period would be a non-compete agreement or a confidential agreement that might be used in the business world. For example, it is common practice in the private sector to require employees to sign a non-compete agreement as a condition of employment. In fact, when I worked at 3M, I was asked to sign a non-compete agreement. The private sector uses these agreements as an important tool to protect their interests. Government should use the same concept to protect the public's interest. This legislation will reinforce an important message to the public that as a legislator, you are focused on the public interest, not your personal interest. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for allowing me to speak with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Frank. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Frank? Thank you very much. Mr. Bodern, do we have Senator
Madam Chair, I've been pondering it. I mean, we've got a couple of options here. I happen to trend toward August 1st. I mean, that's the day when most laws go into effect. And you know, this law could, if it were to pass, it go to effect on August 1st, and then just have a statement saying that it only applies to people who would resign their offices, you know, on or after that date. I don't think we should try to make it effective, like, at the end of the year, December 31st, because you're going to have people, say, an administrative executive positions, legislators who don't run or lose their elections. I mean, all of a sudden there's going to be a run of people registering to be lobbyists before the effective date if you have it later on in the year. But, I mean, but you have to have some date. I would think August 1st would be fine. So,
okay, so Mr. Bodern, how would the amendment read?
Madam Chair, a new Section 2 would read, effective date would be the headnote. Section 1 is effective August 1st, 2010, and applies to individuals leaving the offices or positions listed in Section 1 after August 1st, 2010.
You've heard the amendment, Senator Betzel.
And Madam Chair, I mean, whether individuals like or dislike the bill, I think we have to recognize the fact that if it were to pass, we don't want to penalize somebody who played by the law as it is existed, and all of a sudden get caught up. And as a Senator Day is an obvious example, so I think we should just keep that in mind. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, you know, we keep in mind that this bill is not occasioned by Senator Day's leaving.
No.
The bill was introduced, written 12-3-2008, and it was passed to the Senate floor during the last session. As far as I know, Senator Day had no intention of leading the legislature, so it's not a bill that relates to him as an individual. Mr. Bodern, for the clerk, could you read the amendment one more time?
Certainly, Madam Chair. It's a new Section 2 The head note would read effective date. The new language would read Section 1 is effective August 1st, 2010, and applies to individuals leaving the offices or positions listed in Section 1 after August 1st, 2010.
Thank you. Senator Marty, do you support the amendment?
Madam Chair, I very much do, yes.
Okay, we have the Betzold Amendment before us. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Betzold Amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on Senate File 351 as amended? Is there anyone else in the audience, the public, that wishes to make a statement about Senate File 351 as amended? Okay, now, committee members, further discussion. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a lengthy discussion last year on the bill, and so I won't reiterate everything. But just in summary, one of the points I made last year was, first of all, I was going to ask the question, but I won't. I'm looking for some specific examples of where the scandals have occurred, where this bill would solve some sort of a problem like that. But I think the bottom line is it's a free country. This is America. And people have knowledge and experience. I guess it depends on whether you are for their issue or against their issue, whether that's good or bad. Why we in the democratic process would exclude expertise and information in the process is beyond me. When we are continually trying to reach out for answers, reach out for solutions, bring people in, we are now excluding participants in the process because we believe that they have some undue access or influence, which is nefarious and evil on the process, when, in fact, if someone does have some undue influence or access that maybe they shouldn't, shame on us as legislators for allowing that access and influence, because we are the gatekeepers of what we do, and we are accountable for the decisions we make. And I just think that this bill is a solution in search of a problem. I certainly respect the position of Common Cause and what you're after, but there are so many larger issues to deal with. I don't think that this I think it's very un-American, if I can use that term. You know, people should work and do what they want to do. Different philosophical vantage point, but I won't go into a great length other than to urge committee members to vote this down. Thank you.
Okay, I am informed that there was someone who raised their hand that wanted to make a comment about the bill from the public. If that is the case, if you would come forward to the witness table, please. Sorry, I didn't see you.
Standing for truth, justice, and American way once again.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you. My name is Michael Harrison. I've just started in the lobby process this session. I was here part of last year's session, getting to feel the ropes of the system. And my concern is, just as Mr. Gerlach pointed out, it alleviates people from being involved in the process. And I wonder, you know, I'm very big on the Constitution and the First Amendment. There's one big concern I have. And we brought up Dick Day, and that was the first one that popped in my head. I feel that Mr. Day, regardless of being a former politician or legislature, I feel that, you know, as any American and being part of the process, he has the right to be a lobbyist regardless if he resigned yesterday or, you know, tomorrow. I just question, like Mr. Gerlach said, isn't that anti-American and what we're all about? You know, I didn't realize that I'd be sitting here speaking to you today, but obviously I'm being part of the process.
Thank you for your testimony. Yep. Senator Marty, you want to
thank you.
Respond?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, let me give you, I don't want to put names in this or anything, but let me tell you, a couple of years ago, a state agency commissioner, regulatory agency at that, left the position as commissioner, turns around the next week working for one of the regulated companies. And going back and working on the agency that that individual headed, I just think that's inappropriate. I'm your boss, and now I'm going to come back and tell you from another position that, you know, hey, you work with me, we do it, and I don't think that's a fair way to do it. I think we'd have problems in the courts if people were doing that sort of thing. And I think the public, for good reason, has reason for concern when we as elected officials who are there to represent the public interest turn around, get paid sometimes large sums of money. I don't care what the sum of money is, but if sometimes they're paid large sums of money because we've got the influence, the contacts. We allow, for instance, former senators to come onto the Senate floor unless they're a lobbyist. And I don't have a problem with somebody doing it later. I strongly dispute the notion that it limits our career options when we leave office. As I said, I think there are like 1,500 lobbyists, registered lobbyists in the state. There are got to be a couple million types of jobs in Minnesota we could seek after you leave office. And just to say that that it's okay for us to turn around and immediately come back and lobby our former colleagues. I know there's some lobbyists around here who were legislators 30 years ago or so, and frankly, a lot of us don't even realize some of them were former legislators, and that's different. There's been a cooling off there. They don't have the connections anymore. They don't have the inside influence, but there is a problem with the direct move from one to the other, and I strongly urge your support for the bill.
Further discussion? Senator Carlson?
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I want to just express my strong support for this bill. And even I would like to express support for what you had mentioned earlier about not accepting lobbyist money. I've spoken to several lobbyists in the last couple of weeks here about this, and of course they're very favorable to us banning lobbyist connections or contributions. But one of the things that we have in Minnesota is a very strict control over our donations, very, very good transparency. But in this particular case, now, talking about specific instances, and Senator Gerlach, you were asking for specific instances. This is personalities we're talking about. It's people we're talking about. So, you know, we're dancing around the issues, and of course we bring up Senator Day because he's in the middle of what you could probably say is this bill now, but he is following the law. He's following the law the way the way the law was written when he was in office and now. But we can go back to the federal government, and for instance, let's talk about Medicare Part D and what happened there in the federal government. There was huge amounts of money that was changing hands. People were getting jobs. You cannot deny that there was a quid pro quo there. Now, let's look at Minnesota here, and it's not even in the party that I belong to. There was a very fierce discussion in the newspaper Capital Report here about probably 9 months ago about a legislator who left and then became a lobbyist for a county. And a columnist absolutely brutalized that person, saying that this was a quid pro quo for a vote that that person took. And obviously there was a big gap between the time that that person announced that they were not running and when they became a lobbyist, so it's very difficult to connect the two. But nonetheless, that person, I think, was unfairly criticized and unfairly raked over the coals because that person did become a lobbyist. Now, this kind of bill can eliminate that kind of trap that you get into, the quid pro quo, whether it's valid or invalid. And I think what we should do is I should not have to deal with Senator Olsen here if he's working on a Viking stadium bill and we don't get it through, and then as soon as the session is over, he's in my office lobbying for Viking stadium. Now, I think that's something that this kind of bill can help minimize, and I don't think that that it's unfair, and I don't think that we need to modify it or minimize it because this is somebody's work that they might be able to do. I think there's just too much of a connection.
Thank you, Senator Carson. Further discussion, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Marty, I just wanted to speak in support of your bill as well and offer another example without being too descriptive. But an immediate past legislator went to lobby, well was in office, advocated for one position regarding a regulated industry and some pollution that took place, was hired immediately after not running for re-election again to lobby on behalf of that organization, lobbied at the legislature, but also what's important, I think, is lobbied local elected officials. So it not only can, so someone was lobbying on behalf of this industrial company in the community to local officials, and I think had special access to local elected officials and to members of the legislature because of this person's relationship that she had built up over the years with members of the community and with members of the legislature. So I think it's also selling legislators short to say that it's infringing on our constitutional right to get a job or to lobby at the legislature, because all of us who are elected here were elected for a reason, and I sincerely doubt that if we want to resign our position or resign or not seek re-election, it would be that difficult to get another job. So a two-year cooling-off period does not say that you can never have influence over the legislative process. It just does what the public really wants us to do, which is an important step to help stopping the revolving door that, when examined, there are quite a few examples of.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Marty moves that Senate File 351 as amended be recommended to pass. All who may be in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No. Aye.
The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Marty. We are going to be meeting again on Monday at our regular time. We're going to be taking up a number of confirmations, Met Council, Arts Boards, and the Racing Commission. We have a we're operating under a rule that if we don't act, the nominations go directly to the floor in terms of the number of legislative days or the date. And so I want to give members an opportunity to question those who are going to be before us on Monday. It would be my hope that if for some reason, because that will be the only day, and then after that, the nominations go to the floor, that if someone is not able to come, that we would entertain a motion to move their appointment to the floor without recommendation, so that if they're not able to be here, we don't want it just to automatically go forward, but that we that we acknowledge it, and that we particularly if somebody wasn't able to be here, that to answer questions, that we would have a motion not to recommend them. I just don't think that's fair. So unless anybody has a better way of proceeding, we will act on the nominations or the appointments of the people who are able to be here. And actually, I think everybody has said they can be here. One person can't. That we will entertain motions to regarding their appointment and a recommendation with regard to Senate confirmation. And we probably are going to meet next Friday. We're not meeting on Wednesday because that is the One Minnesota Conference. So we will be taking up you'll get an agenda. We'll be taking up a few more bills that we want to get to the floor immediately or as soon as we can, and then or non-controversial bills, we'll move those next Friday, and then after that we'll go back to our Monday, Wednesday schedule insofar as possible. Thank you very much. There being no further business before the committee, we're adjourned.